What's up, boys and girls? Forgive my voice today. I've been fallen victim to the Atlanta seasonal allergies, and they are wrecking me. Today's episode is an awesome one. Today I'm sitting down with my good friend and host of the Atlanta Foodcast, Ben Getz. If you haven't heard the Atlanta Foodcast, definitely look it up. Ben brings you interviews with some of the biggest and best names in Atlanta's cuisine scene, including Ann Quattrano, Billy Streck, Steven Satterfield, and many, many more. Ben's a really cool guy on top of that, and he agreed to come down and chat with me about all things food. We get into his background a little bit, his growing up, his upbringing, his relationship to food, how that relationship changed as he grew up and began cooking for himself, how he decided to start the Atlanta Foodcast to begin with, what his kind of journey was in getting that started and getting more exposure to some of the bigger names in the Atlanta food scene. Now, over a year old, the Atlanta Foodcast. So congratulations, Ben. Over 50 episodes, 50, yeah, wow, 50 episodes released and many, many more recorded, ready for release. So Ben's been killing it. Really excited to have him on the show. We talk a lot about Atlanta food. So we do get into, once we get past the, you know, the nuts and bolts of podcasting and all things great about that, we talk a lot about where should we eat in Atlanta now. We're both pretty big foodies and both have been in Atlanta for a long time. I'm a, you know, native Atlantan. And we just went nuts talking about food, including if you had one weekend in Atlanta, Friday through Sunday, where should you eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and get drinks and get brunch and all those things. So very fun episode. Ben's a great guy. Hoping to do a lot more of these where we just banter about food. Ben, thanks so much for staying up late with me and chatting. Ladies and gentlemen, enjoy today's episode with Ben Getz, host of the Atlanta Foodcast.
At any given moment, we know what the world is feeling.
Are you wearing pajama pants to school? Why, yes, I am.
I was, in a way, elevating him. I was celebrating him.
We wanted to build a beer pong table.
No, it's the Show ATL podcast. Welcome to the Show ATL podcast. Is that what we're called? Yeah. We're just talking about tagging your show. Welcome to the Show ATL podcast.
Welcome to the show. Radio podcast video, no, YouTube channel. That's what we were doing.
That's it.
Yeah.
No. But yeah, we're sitting down today with fellow podcaster, host of the Atlanta Foodcast, Ben Getz.
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
Oh, wait, sorry. Hello, friends. There we go.
That's it. That's how people, that's the familiar intro there.
Yeah, I know. Knows. This is my second time in this chair, though. This is great. And this was, God, was that last summer that we sat down? It was you and Corrigan and myself.
Yeah. So we sat down right before we were actually about to release our first episode, which was July 23rd of 2018.
You never forget the date. Isn't it great?
I know. It's wild. It's like, we had so much money riding on July 23rd, not actually, you know, any sort of capital.
But there's no money in podcasting.
There's no money in this. So if anyone's thinking about doing this, I can show you what we made off our last like five episodes and it's like 10 bucks. So yeah. Don't get into this, but
$10 is enough to eat, more than your lunch at Bell Street Burritos.
There you go. Yeah. Okay. So if you're looking for a, you know, a pretty weighty burrito, you know, a lot of content in there.
And you could get a really cold bottle of water at Pond City Market.
Yeah, that's a whole different story.
Yeah, and you can pay for three of your tires parking in Buckhead or Midtown.
Yep, three out of four.
Crescent Avenue.
Yeah.
We could keep going. This could be a segment for your show.
So that's actually not bad. So
what can $10 get you in Atlanta?
Well, I hope this is not the last time you're on the show. What I would like to do is, instead of just talking to an artist or a creative or whatever about what it is that they do, I want to talk to someone who's as plugged in to Atlanta in a slightly different way, right? You're all about food.
Yeah.
But as plugged in to creating content about our city as we think we are here at Show ATL and putting together something that maybe the listeners don't get in every episode that we put out, right? Like something outside of the realm of just like arts and design and and creativity, right? But let's talk about something, you know, still related, still relevant.
Sure.
But let's mix it up a little bit.
I love it. You know, I think something that I really love about the podcasting side of things is it's an opportunity for me to sit down with someone and hear their story. And then I think once, because every one of the episodes of the Atlanta Foodcast start the same. Like, I mean, it's usually like some goofy, you know, pleasantries, and I never tell anyone when I'm hitting record. So right. I was like, oh, that self-deprecating stuff made it into the show, by the way. but I love it when they start thinking about, you know, their childhood and where they grew up and who they actually are, like where they're actually from. And then like it sparks like that memory of, whoa, like something just rushed back to me about my creativity or my creation about something or the person or the place or this instance in my life that was a really big jumping off point. And then they just go, you know, perfect example. Like I sat down with Sarah O'Brien of Little Tart. And it also, if you don't know Little Tart yet, I mean, go to Crog Street Market, go to their location in Grant Park or the new one in Summerhill. And you can't even quantify the flavor factor of the croissant that they make at Little Tart.
It's so big.
Well, it's
so
huge.
Tasty.
Yeah. But every iteration is just like another solar system of flavor. I don't know why I've only got space references right now, but it was just so fun to listen to her, like just kind of rabbit trail with her story of like, you know, being in Paris and learning from this guy and something that someone said to her that was this huge moment of inspiration of her becoming truly a baker and a business owner. And that's what I really love. I love it when it's more of an opportunity for people to show just as much who they are as much of what they've done, you know, because I think there's so much behind the person. And, you know, I mean, telling stories of, you know, chefs and business owners and restaurateurs and, you know, baristas and, you know, mixologists, that the thing that I love about them is people have such a strange misconception, or there's so much to debunk about people in the restaurant industry of like, you're a chef and you own a restaurant. Like, well, you must live this lavish lifestyle.
Yeah. It's kind of a black box.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot like publishing, like book publishing. Mm-hmm. It's obviously a very, I wouldn't say saturated, but it's a very kind of full comprehensive industry. But a lot of people don't know what's going on behind closed doors.
Yeah.
No idea.
Yeah. And I mean, cause you never really get into too much. And I mean, I've done it a little bit on a few interviews, but you know, talking about the profitability of restaurants or margin. What does that look like?
Or food cost.
How you run a kitchen. What does it look like to pay for labor in a restaurant? Like when you're talking about percentages that don't really mean much to the common person walking by on the Beltline. But when you start talking about running, you know, I mean, I don't know if it's a really bad week, you know, you're running like 48% labor. You're watching so much just happen in front of you. But those are not the sides that make it into, you know, shows on Netflix or whatever's on TV or what you read about.
You see the glamour, you see the, you know, the final plate and everyone clapping and all the accolades. And
it's great. I mean, that's obviously a part of the industry. It's a part of the business.
Sure.
But,
yeah.
You know, I grew up with parents that truly worked 80 hours a week or more. And I remember very vividly memories of being in high school. My mom would leave at 4 a.m. to drive down to the restaurant to get her team started and the whole slew of, you know, everything. She was an executive pastry chef. So it was just like this laundry list of things that had to be made to feed the people that were coming into this restaurant, which was on Disney property.
And early too, with anything with pastry, early days.
It just takes time, man. Mm-hmm. But also being on Disney property, it was a food factory. I mean, you're just feeding people just left and right. And she wouldn't come home until sometimes 10:30, 11 a.m., you know? and then she'd get up and do it the next day. And then
like
my dad, and you know, I mean, he, my dad actually worked for Papa John's. It was magic. I think about so many fun memories when my dad was working for Papa John's. He was a district manager, and you know, it was so much fun to spend just time in the restaurants, like watching my dad, you know, like from, you know, from the perspective of like, you know, running a restaurant and then like all these people and then training, and then he's still just covered in flour, like just covered in it, you know, and he's still like making pizzas and stuff. And it was really fun to be able to watch my parents work so hard. And that's what made me appreciate the industry so much, is like, I mean, are my parents part of the restaurant industry? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Is it, it's just so funny. People are like, whoa, your parents are chefs. Like, you must have eaten the best meals in the world. Like, I mean, by my standard, when we did, yeah, but right. It's not like my, you know, not like my childhood was filled with like foie gras and caviar and, you know, on blinis and anything like that. I mean, it was humble food was my favorite thing.
Yeah. With the rise of this big, like celebrity chef culture, right? All these programming around food and plating and presentation and, you know, molecular gastronomy, especially when Ferran Adrià and El Bulli started kind of taking cuisine to the next level, right? And then all of these chefs kind of followed suit. I think there's been this kind of rise, plateauing, and fall of presentation and price tag over just good food, you know, because I want to say maybe, you know, 8 to 10 years ago, it was all about, you know, who's got the most Michelin stars, who's, you know, putting together the best experience, and who's got the highest price tag. And I think now a lot of chefs are going back to just, you know, good comfort style food, right? And a lot of, it's almost, I don't want to say a backlash, but it's almost a reversal of, you know, prestige over just like good cooking. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean. I mean, it's really funny. You know, I think El Bulli and, you know, restaurants like Alinea in Chicago and you know, the approach of molecular gastronomy, the number of times that I've experienced food in that vein of cooking has been so very few. And it's fun. I mean, I think that's what I really look at it though, is like, is it fun? Absolutely. Is it creative? I have no idea how creative it truly is.
Right.
But it is really interesting that it's not like it rode this trend line of like, well, all of these restaurants are just waiting to make it there one day. You know, it's really fun to see how much cuisine has transformed to really becoming, I think, what people like to eat. I think what people like to eat, not what they're trying to figure out if they actually enjoy something that's typically a root vegetable, but now it's a, you know, it's some sort of foam that's been, you know, doused in, you know, liquid hydrogen or liquid nitrogen or whatever. And I don't know. Is hydrogen flammable? I don't know.
Hydrogen is flammable. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know anything about the chemistry behind.
I'm a chemist.
Really fine. Actually. Are you actually?
No, absolutely not.
I was like, what? So what the hell?
Like, that guy's an idiot. But no, I mean, I think it's so fun to be able to eat food that is typically served in a different format, and you know, so something that might be deconstructed or is on a plate and this is reminiscent of a dish that you know. That to me is really, really fun. But I also have to look at, you know, dining is, you know, I don't know, you know, as a father of two kids and the number of times that my wife and I get to go out, just the two of us, to go enjoy a meal. I mean, it's once a month, you know, maybe.
Yeah.
And, you know, when we go out, it's typically something that we've either really, really looked forward to, but it's not necessarily just a dish. It's not like a style. It's something where we know more about the experience that we're going to have, and that the food is almost, that's the adventure, you know. It's more of like, okay, cool. We can go to this place. We can spend some time here, and we can just have some fun with, like, I have no idea what we're going to get, but you know, it's much less about having this aspirational moment of like, oh, finally we got to go to this restaurant.
Right.
You know?
Right.
I mean, I think that that's great, you know, and perfect example of that. Like, we were so stoked to go to Lazy Betty.
Okay.
So, and I, you want to talk about, I mean, food that is just so full of like memory. And it's plated so beautifully. I mean, like, I have to like show you some pictures, man, because I posted them all on our stories like a few nights ago.
I saw that. Okay. Yeah. All right. That was gorgeous.
But everything was so beautifully subtle, and everything just had this amazing memory or story or something tied to it. Like, there was, you know, it's not just like, oh, well, here's what we did with our daikon, and this is why, like, we cut it this way. It was more of, this was the inspiration behind this dish, and this is the interpretation of that story, and here's what it looks like on a plate. Eat it. And, like, perfect example, there's this dish that's in a, it's kind of like in a ramekin, you know? And it's called truffle hunting in Georgia. So okay. it looks like gravel, you know, like dirt.
Right.
And then underneath that, it's supposed to emulate like Georgia clay. And then you're actually digging for truffles in the dirt. So there's actually black truffles that are like shaved into this. And then the most like brilliant mashed potatoes you've ever had, but it doesn't look like it.
Right.
You know? So
right.
That to me is the flavors that you're tasting are like, this is, I've eaten this my entire life, mm-hmm. but the dish is just not at all what you would expect. And that's kind of like the mashup of how people like to eat and extremes of creativity that meet somewhere in the middle. And I love that that's where so much dining, especially in Atlanta, is right now.
It has to be, but you hit the nail on the head when you said it has to be delicious, right? That is where the real talent and skill comes in, is that these chefs are able to design these courses and these menus that not only present beautifully and evoke a certain emotion, right? They take you back to something or they introduce this kind of contrarian novelty in a way that you're interacting with the dish differently. But it has to taste good. Like if it tastes like crap, then it doesn't matter what it looks like.
Mm.
And that's where the skill comes in, is that they're able to mesh the incredible kind of depth of craft of cooking.
Yeah.
You know, with the presentation and the story and all of everything behind it.
And I think, you know, I guess like the places that I would rather push people to is, if dining and going out to a restaurant and having an experience is going to something that's more like a steakhouse, it's more about what you are purchasing has this type of price tag.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I mean, eating a really great porterhouse, like, I mean, it's great. You know, I mean, there's no way to like cut it differently. Like, really good steak is really good.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, typically, I mean, if you want to go to you know, like any number of places that are kind of like that style, I mean, it's, you got like your protein and you got like these two sides and, you know, I mean, there's some layer of creativity in there. And, but for some people, they only have one idea, you know, like that's what I'm going to do. It's like, I want to go out and I want to get a steak and I want the, you know, maybe asparagus and then like mashed potatoes, you know,
sure.
Or like, I don't know. People love lobster mac and cheese. It's like, give the lobster to someone else and either put it on a lobster roll and now I'm interested, but I don't want your lobster mac and cheese.
I'm not a huge fan of lobster mac and cheese either. I've had it a couple times. It just doesn't.
Too indulgent to me.
Yeah. It doesn't. Mac and cheese on its own is like fairly indulgent, you know, like that's like a once in a couple of weeks, I'll have like a thing of mac and cheese. I feel full afterwards. I feel great, but it's like, I'm not eating this again tomorrow. You know, like
it's like the most restaurant critic thing I've ever said in my life is like, it's too indulgent.
You're a modern day Jonathan Gold.
Gosh.
Rest in peace.
Oh no.
You're not.
That just makes me an asshole really. But no, I mean, I think what's so interesting to me about how some people like to eat is they don't really get off of one line of thought. You know, it's like food is this, and the variety only goes so far, you know? And I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, what I really like to eat today is Well, first and foremost, I am married to a vegetarian. So my wife is a...
That's right, you mentioned that to me.
Yeah, what we call a full-time vegetarian. And by... not that we... I mean, we've tried actually many times, but my kids actually eat, you know, I mean, 100% vegetarian all the time.
Okay.
And we were actually we were at Pond City Market. And if you haven't had the wings from Monero, have you?
I haven't had the wings from Monero. Yep. No.
Yep. This episode of the Show ATL podcast is brought to you by Monero and the wings from Monero.
Get them. Come on. They're great. Come on board, Monero. Sponsor this show.
Yeah. So since we're speaking about food, and again, like this is just, it's so perfect because it's not, the showmanship is very wonderfully pedestrian. So they cook these wings over a grill, and it's amazing grill the way that they do this. Look up Sean Brock and like how he uses this style of grill.
It's true.
Amazing.
It's like the pulley grill over coals. Oh, yeah, he uses the same brand as well, and he's fairly known for that.
Yeah, and I can't remember the name of it, but they cook these wings over these coals, and then they bring them off, and then they bring them to you in a bag, like a paper bag.
Okay.
And it might have a plastic or like a cellophane like window so you can see into it. I can't remember, but they bring them to you literally in a paper bag, and then they come to your table, and then they open the bag, and then they shake in just enough Valentina, which is my favorite hot sauce in the world. That's because I'm just wise. It's amazing. And then they close up the bag again, and they shake it up, and then they pour those wings into a bowl.
Ugh.
So off the hot grill, into a bag so it accumulates enough steam, hot sauce and like, so texturally flavor, like biting into one of these, and I don't eat chicken a lot anymore, but biting into one of these wings, you wonder to yourself just for a minute, you're like, why does anyone need to deep fry a wing ever again?
Dang. They just, is that good?
They're incredible.
I mean, it sounds delicious. Yeah. I haven't had like a proper dinner yet. So just like listening to this, I'm just like,
it's worth it. I mean, they close at 9. So you got 5 minutes. If you got the fastest bird scooter, you could make it.
I could make it. Those fast ones go like 16 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Pretty dope.
Yeah.
I'm on them a lot. We're both on the Beltline.
Yeah.
Should mention.
So I just don't ride bird scooters or Lime scooters or Lyft scooters or Uber scooters or.
You hit all of them, I think.
There's only four, right?
Four scooter brands.
Oh, wait.
Here.
Well, the Uber one is called Jump. Sorry.
Yeah,
Uber
yeah.
scooter. It's called Jump scooter.
So it shows how much I'm a millennial. You know,
I know. So this is important. So I'm going to go for it. I ride scooters.
Okay.
However, I do not, have not, will never ride them on the Beltline.
And
I don't
why
care
is
if
that?
It's legal. I don't care if it's allowed. I don't care if it has been written into city legislation as of late that it is now allowed on the Beltline. You're only supposed to ride one per person with a helmet, and the speed limit is 15 miles an hour.
Yep.
That shit is dangerous.
It is dangerous. There are so many kids on the Beltline, and you know.
Like my two kids.
Right. So
right, Parsa?
So I don't go out when it's crowded, and that's important because...
That's because you're smart.
Well, I've been on my bike enough on the Beltline. I've been on bird scooters enough on the Beltline to know that, you know, adults, you can yell at them and scream at them and they'll stay in their lane, but kids won't. Kids are unpredictable. Kids on little, you know, kid scooters and kids running around, you're bound to hit someone.
Yeah.
And there's plenty of people on the Beltline that just don't know Beltline etiquette because they don't live on the Beltline like you and I do, right? But
it's also kind of sidewalk etiquette though, or just walking path etiquette.
Well, it's true.
You stay on the right side. And if you need to pass someone, you pass on their left, not on their right. You pass on their left because of oncoming additional foot traffic.
And right.
I think scooters are great. I love the point A to point B type of transportation. I think it's great that it makes it accessible to everyone. Here's my last bit. And if this makes it into the episode, that's great. If it doesn't, I completely understand. It's important that we're having this conversation though.
This is just you and I, talking shop and shooting shit about food in Atlanta. So it'll make it in.
Bird scooters have a lot to do with food because it gets you to your wings at Monero faster. Just don't ride it on the Beltline. But here's my three things. Here's my scooter manifesto, as it were. keep your kids who are not, I don't even care if your kid's not 18. If your kid is not smart enough and responsible enough to be riding a scooter and you're the parental unit who has accessed the scooter for their riding pleasure, cut that shit out. It's so dangerous, so dumb. I was a young boy myself at the age of 13. I never made one good decision in my life when I was 13 or 14 years old. Not a single one. The second one would be, overarchingly, if you're riding a scooter, just don't do it on the Beltline. Do everyone a service and go ride it on the street. Ride it on North Avenue. People slow down. I rode one from Virginia Highland all the way to downtown for an event.
Really?
2 weeks ago.
Not at all getting on the Beltline.
Hell no. Got it on North Avenue, rode it down north. I think I went across Boulevard. I kept going. And then, yeah, I went down Peachtree.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm proud of you. I am proud of you because I do ride scooters on the Beltline. Yeah.
And then number three, if you feel like you need to pass someone and it's a beautiful Saturday or Sunday and you feel like you need to be on the Beltline with your scooter, you should be the slowest person traveling on the Beltline.
Yeah.
And
the Beltline is for everyone, man. And that's so
Can you edit in like the more you know sound right after that?
Yeah, that would be good.
Yeah.
We can.
Yeah.
We can talk to Coleman.
Yeah.
About doing that. But
sorry.
I'm with you, man. I think the Beltline is, it's a clusterfuck on weekends. And on nice days.
Yeah.
I mean, I ride scooters around only during the week, like only between Monday and Thursday.
Yeah.
Because then I know that I have enough room and visibility to slow down, to get out of somebody's way, to whatever. But yeah, and like Thursday evening through Sunday, like no, not a chance.
I know we walk a lot, you know, on the Beltline on Fridays. Like we'll walk from our place down to Krog.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's, you know, busier than others, but then like Saturdays, beautiful, like crisp 71 degrees, not a cloud in the sky, light breeze. Why would you not want to be on the Atlanta Beltline? Everybody does.
It's a mess. Oh my God. I mean,
but it's so perfect over here on this side of town.
It is.
I think bring all of the foot traffic, you know, that you want over on the Beltline, but if you're going to be on the scooter, then you need to be the slowest and safest person out there. See what I did here?
I agree.
Put one of your stickers on my Hydro Flask.
You did. That's gorgeous.
Yep.
Well, right. Now we both have Show I Tell stickers on our Hydro Flask.
Hey-o.
The Foodcast sticker you gave me is on my old Hydro Flask that broke. So I don't have a current Foodcast sticker on this Hydro Flask. Do you have one on you?
I think I do.
All right. We can get it later.
Yeah, we'll
but,
do that.
Let me like back up for just a second for people who, yeah, if you haven't listened to Ben's show, the Atlanta Foodcast, you can pretty much find it anywhere you get your podcast. Just, you know, Google Atlanta Foodcast. I'm sure you'll find it.
I don't want to be the only podcast where you can't say that, you know, where, cause like we all say it, we're like, wherever you get your podcast, I want to be like, you can only listen to my show on one podcast platform.
Yeah. You're not Tim Ferriss. You can't do that yet. Even Tim Ferriss is on every podcast platform.
I want to be like, you can only listen to my show on MySpace or Blogger. You can only access it through Blogger and, a terrible idea, but I kind of want to do it just because, you know.
Well, give it a shot. Anyway, let's see how that works out.
Yeah, bad idea, but whatever.
But you've been doing this for just over a year now. Yeah, so I met you at the Atlanta Food and Wine Festival 2018.
Which is happening again in 2 months.
I am so excited.
Give or take.
I'm so excited.
I know, dude.
Pretty wild, actually. If you go to delta.com and like go to their like Sky Miles experiences.
I've seen this. No, I've seen this.
Yeah. It's a picture of me on their like, bid.
Your face is right there. Yep.
which is kind of fun, but
and I was not there because you told me to go there, by the way.
No, I what, on the Sky Miles bid?
No, I was there for another reason. Not because you were like, hey, check out my face on Delta. I saw it just like organically.
Oh, really?
Oh yeah.
Oh, that's wild.
Yeah.
Well,
and my kids know your face too, because your face was plastered on the side of Paris.
That's right.
On the Beltline for a long time. It washed away.
It washed. I was on the one column on the Paris on Ponce building that got washed out by the gutter overflow, which is And then right after that, they put a picture of that wall in Delta Sky Miles magazine.
Yeah. You do have one of those faces though. Like your smile is just like, look at that guy. He's having such a good day.
Well, it's either that or this guy looks like a terrorist. So I'll take like happy smiles.
You look like a guy that did not ride his bird scooter on the Beltline.
Well, thank you.
See what I did there?
I do.
It was a nice callback.
I do that all the time. But, but yeah, so I met you at the, Atlanta Food and Wine Festival, June 2018.
Yeah.
And it was you know, fucking crazy. This still hasn't happened to me since then. But you came up to me and you're like, hey, do you host the show ATL
podcast? Oh, I fanboyed you big time.
Yeah, and I was like, oh my God, like this is the best day of my life. Someone recognized me, like, yeah. And then you introduced yourself and told me about your show. And I was like, yeah, I've heard of you too. And, you know, I've got a bunch of friends that listen to your show. And from there, we just kind of stayed in touch.
Yeah, man.
You gave me this awesome Manfrotto. Yeah. Manfrotto, a little tripod for my Zoom.
That's a huge, huge boost to a recording device.
Is
getting it off the table.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
isn't it funny?
It's awesome being able to just like play around with this, look at this. It's enhanced my podcasting experience tenfold. So seriously, thanks for that. But you have just recorded, or you've just released, I should say, episode, what, 51 or 50?
50. I have no idea. I mean, like recorded, I try to record as many interviews as I can. And, you know, what I really love to do is like try and think of, you know, how can I record an interview and then try and commit as best I can to keeping it like 4 to 6 weeks until I publish it.
Right.
So I try and tell people like, look, if there's anything that's pertinent or it's just more advantageous for your episode of the show to be live on this date or in this time frame or in the month of May or July, let me know. You know, I mean, I'd rather it work for someone's benefit, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's crazy. I think I was just telling you before we started recording, like, I didn't even realize that we'd like episode 50 had like come and gone. I just wasn't even paying attention really.
Yeah. That's wild, man. Yeah. You've been doing this for just over a year, 50 episodes, 50 plus episodes.
Yeah.
And you said you're recorded out for like another couple of months.
Yeah. I mean, it's like in the early summer. I mean, it's really fun because, you know, I say we, it's just like the easiest thing to say, right? Cause nobody wants to say I, at least I don't, but, we don't, the show started last year and then took a break for the holidays and then season two started back in January. And, I love that there's so much to cover. And I think, you know, someone asked me like, what are you going to do when you interview everyone that you want to have on your show? And I was like, I'd go back and interview them again because we only scratched like, you know, 2% of the surface.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and like so many things that we could talk about or, you know, issues or other aspects of the industry. I mean, you know, things that are more business centric, things that are more, you know, there's so many different ways to do it, but
for sure.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, I love that it's a thing that I have the opportunity to do on a weekly basis.
Mm.
And frankly, I mean, honestly, if I had the margin to actually publish more than one episode a week, I would love to do that.
Yeah.
I just, I need interns, I guess.
Yeah. Or you can hire our man Coleman.
Oh yeah.
Coleman's been awesome, man. Coleman, shout out to you on the air, which I haven't done enough, but Coleman has made our lives at Show ATL so much easier because unlike you, I am terrible with audio editing in that it just takes me a really long time to like figure it out, you know, and I'm not using very sophisticated tools and I just, you know, I'm doing other things other than this show. And it takes up like hours and hours and hours of my week that I just don't have. And with Coleman, it's like, hey man, we can record an episode on Thursday and it'll be out on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's awesome because then I can fit in like three interviews into my week now.
Yeah.
Like at most nowadays, I'm doing about three interviews a week.
Right.
Which is awesome. We can keep some on backlog and release one every Monday. But
yeah.
But you've had the privilege of having some really influential and big time Atlanta restaurateurs and chefs on your show. Anne Quattrano, Steven Satterfield, Chef Ron Sue, who was on Final Table.
Yeah.
Huge. I mean, you're killing it.
Well, and here's the thing, man. Like I was just telling someone, last week, someone who's hopefully also starting a podcast or in the food space,
mm-hmm.
You know, like I look at what the Atlanta Foodcast is and, I happen to be the one kind of quarterbacking this venture, but there's two things, and I really look at this podcast really belongs to Atlanta, and it really belongs in Atlanta, whether or not I'm at the helm. I really hope that someone is perpetuating people's stories being told in some way in this format, where it's like, let's kind of ditch, you know, for the most part, like, there's no qualifying factor. It's your story. Right. It's who you are. It's where you come from. And then just like, talk to me about your, you know, your life. Like, what are you, where did you come from and what are you doing now? Because that's really what makes up most of us, you know, is like, where did you come from? And then I kind of give me the rundown on what's life like right now. And hopefully that fits in, you know, for the most part within like 45 to 50 minutes.
And it humanizes somebody whose work seems very far removed from the general kind of population that listens to your show.
Yeah. I think what's a perfect example, man, like someone like Ron, I see. So we just dated Lazy Betty and it was phenomenal. I mean, it was just fun, man. Just so much fun. But, I see Ron out on the Beltline. Mm-hmm. He lives just up from us. And I see him more on the Beltline at Publix or just around town. Like I pull up to the stoplight and there he is. And I mean, he's got a little kid too. So yeah, I mean, you know, most of everything we talk about is now like, you know, filtered through dad jokes, but, but people would have the idea of like, this guy was on this giant TV show with all of the lights and all of the elevators and food and crazy stuff. Like I can only imagine what that guy's like or what his life is like, mm-hmm. or what his personality, like, it doesn't matter, you know, it just, none of that stuff matters. Yeah. Like, I mean, the show is amazing. And like, I loved watching him on the show and everyone else, but like none of that at all, like made it into how I see him now. Does that make sense?
Of course. Yeah. And it makes sense to me because I'm doing something similar with a lot of artists and people in the creative field who, sure. To me, if you were to just look at them through their work, tells a little bit of a, you know, incomplete story of who they are as a person.
Yeah.
You know, and getting to kind of understand the person behind the work, mm-hmm. and really understanding that people who are, you know, in the food industry or people who are in the arts and creative industry, they're not any different from you and I. They just have honed their craft in a particular area.
I think, you know, the people that are different, they probably want to be, you know?
Right. But sure. Yeah.
That's another example. I mean, like someone like Annie Quattrano, you know, and I don't know how much I've been to Star Provisions over the years, and it's been a long time since it's been like Float Away, and only for an event. So I never actually sat down and had a meal at Bacchanalia.
Okay.
At the old location. Well, never went to the original, never went to the one for a meal at West Side Provisions, and I still haven't been down for a proper meal.
Got it.
At Bacchanalia. So
yeah, me neither.
But I, you know, I mean, you read about someone, you know, you read about them and their history and, you know, the restaurants that they've opened and the things that they've done and how many people make up the family tree of this person started working for Ann Quattrano and then they went here and now look where they're at. And they have this restaurant and this one. And then it's so much just like the branches of this family tree just like go, like they're just so intertwined.
Yeah.
And, it felt like I was just sitting, and I mean this in a very, very good way. It just felt like I was sitting down and having a conversation with my mom. Yeah. The way that she spoke about her story, about her husband, about where she comes from, getting them both fired from a restaurant, you know, starting Bacchanalia, moving back, you know, from, I mean, you know, you're talking about, you know, West Coast style dining, you know, stuff like Chez Panisse and Alice Waters and, you know, I mean, like, crazy, you know, I mean, like epicenter of,
oh yeah,
if you want to be a restaurateur, especially like West Coast, California, you know, and then they come back here to like rural Georgia on a farm.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, then, it's, yeah, it blows my mind.
Yeah. It was beautiful. And I love that, you know, so much of the conversation was about, you know, like all of the restaurants and, you know, I mean, just food in general and a lot about like agriculture and being an agriculture forward state,
right?
You know, and but then like we were just, you know, just kind of kicking it and talking about like English muffins for a little while because it was a huge part of like what she's working on for
Pancake Social.
But right. It was just so cool that so much of that was in her mind, mm-hmm. you know? And I think that people sitting down and just, you know, getting through the parts of their story that they can kind of, you know, that they want to tell is what I really want to, this is really what I want to hear.
Right.
You know, like, what are the things that really stand out? But then also, like, just talk, like, just keep going. I mean, I remember sitting down with Ron Eister and yeah. dude, we probably sat down and recorded like for an hour and a half, and he just went through everything, you know, like Top Chef, opening a restaurant, pretty much closing his entire, you know, family of restaurants that he had built. And then, you know, his life and, I mean, personal and professional. And I mean, it was just, it was so great, but it was like, I was just sitting there. I mean, you kind of forget after a while that you have a microphone in front of you.
You do. And, you know? And for, I'm psyched to have you on the show. It's the first time I've had another host or another podcaster on the show. Mm. You're so comfortable with just, you know, your style of talking, the microphone, all of it's just so fluid. It makes the conversation that much easier, you know, because you really do forget all this shit's here. I've had people on the show. We've talked for 2.5 hours and gotten up and taken multiple like beer and bathroom breaks.
Your batteries lasted that long?
Yeah, dude. These
Good
things,
for you.
I use rechargeable, forget what they are. Some sort of like Energizer rechargeable batteries. I charge them.
Energizer, plutonium.
Something. I charge them to full blast before every interview. Yeah. So I've.
My batteries have died on me several times.
Do you use rechargeable ones or do you use standard? You really should get into the rechargeable.
Can you send me a link on Amazon, Parson?
I can. I can do that.
Yeah.
But yeah. But did you know that you were going to get into food? Because we talked before. I don't know if this was on or not, but both your parents were chefs.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And yeah. And you bake a lot, right? You've got a whisk tattooed on your arm.
That's my mother's whisk. Yeah. So that was my mother's whisk that she gave to me, for my first restaurant job that I had in college. That's actually a really funny story. I got this job and it was like this tiny little bistro. I went to school in Southwestern Virginia. So, not like a super happening place, you know, I mean, there wasn't a lot going on.
Sure.
So, yeah. I mean, it was just one of like the only like few restaurants on Main Street near the college that I went to. And, like we didn't bake the bread there. We actually got it brought in from a bakery, but we made everything else like from scratch. It was like soups and sauces and like jam. And, I was cooking like and I was young, man. I was like maybe 19,
right.
You know, 20. And, that was like, I mean, I knew that I had all this knowledge somewhere from watching my parents and watching my mom spending time in the kitchen. And I think the first day that I walked in, the lady was like, she's like, can you make French onion soup? I'm like, yeah. I was like, do you have a preferred recipe that you'd like for me to follow? She's like, no, just whatever you want to do. They're like, there's cookbooks over there, but just go make French onion soup. That was like my interview.
Yeah.
Wow. Like, go make French onion soup, which frankly, like, it's not that hard.
Really?
You know? Well, it's great. It's basically just beef broth with onions in it.
And you
blast with like provolone over the top and a broiler in your oven. And then like, who's not going to want to eat that? Well, then you can make some really badass croutons with it, but throw some herbs in there. Herbs de Provence.
I'm getting hungry, man.
So, but no, I mean, so much of my childhood had everything to do with food.
Yeah.
Everything. But I was not a good eater. I was not a respectful eater growing up. I was very picky.
Yeah, it was the same way.
Yeah, and I was I just had a hard time with getting into food, really, unless it was something that was really comfortable. But not until I really became an adult, really, did I start to really appreciate food. And I really started to appreciate food once I started cooking. And one of the first things that I wanted to do in college, which most people do, if you're not looking at your mailbox, hoping that you have a care package in there from your parents filled with, you know, I don't know, what do you get now?
No idea.
It used to be iTunes gift cards. And
now you get like those vape pens.
Oh yeah. My mom and dad sent me a Juul.
Yeah. That's what you get
is
now.
Is that what you get?
No, you don't.
Oh,
I don't know. Maybe shit, man. I don't know. These kids now with their vape bongs and their
vape bongs and
their scooters
and their their damn sneakers or whatever else.
Yeah.
Is this exactly. a segment that you're doing where we just talk like a bunch of curmudgeons? I love it.
I'm okay with it.
Yeah, that's cool. But no, but you know, like I wanted so badly to have the food that my mom would be able to make for me.
Yeah.
Coming home. Like on the one day off a week or every other week that she would have. She would make something like split pea and ham soup and homemade bread or rolls or just something where it is so aromatic.
Right.
But it's like six ingredients for the whole meal. You know, it's just something so simple. That's what I wanted. I wanted so deeply to be able to make that in my own little apartment kitchen. I think I lived in an apartment with five other guys.
Jesus.
But literally, we all had our own bedrooms. It was like a six bedroom apartment. Where on God's green earth does that happen other than like a college campus apartment?
Yeah, it's not going to happen in Atlanta.
But it was like a full kitchen. It was great, you know, and I wanted so deeply to make the food that my mom would make for me. And that's really when I started cooking. And I started cooking for my friends. And then I really started to get into baking because I wanted homemade bread. Because the bread that you get from the grocery store, unless it's a bakery, like the bread that you get from the grocery store, like it's just shit. It's terrible, you know? And I had this picture in my mind. So that's probably when I was like 18 is when I first started like fumbling my way through baking bread.
Interesting.
And then started working on sourdough and growing my own starter. And
really?
Yeah. So my starter's not that old though. I mean, it's not the starter that I had in college. I mean, the starter that I have now is probably like, I don't know, 6 years old, 7 years old,
yeah.
Something like that. But
that fascinates me, man. I know nothing about like, you know, baking at all. Like I, when it comes to baking for me, it's just like pastry and I follow the recipe to a T.
Well, it's baking though. So math.
I mean, it's maths and it's not things that I really enjoy non-baking cooking.
Yeah.
That's kind of, I've always like watching my parents
do
it growing up. It was always like, you just kind of feel it out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you put a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And it's like a labor of love as opposed to a labor of
rustic,
chemistry.
Yeah. Like rustic bread though.
Yeah.
Is very forgiving. If you want to make something very specific, like baguette.
Sure.
You've got to dial it in a little bit more. You got to know what you're working with percentage wise is and, but bread can be very forgiving. It can be pretty, you know, touch and go. It can be pretty feel by hand. And I mean, the best thing that you can do is weigh everything because then you know that you're doing your ratios properly. But I learned how to bake from Chad Robertson's book. I mean, he's the prolific baker from Tartine in San Francisco.
Okay.
So his book, Tartine Bread, is the sourdough that I wanted to make. And that's what I first started with. It was him or Peter Reinhardt. I don't remember, but I wanted to learn how to bake sourdough because I wanted to eat sourdough, which I guess this is there's some sort of thematics here because I wanted to listen to the podcast that I ended up making.
Right. I was going to get into that.
This is horrible. I should just stop this whole thing. But, I think what I wanted was I wanted to learn how to make the thing that I actually wanted, not to be like subsistent in any way, but just because I that was the idea that I had in my head. And if I had the ability to create it myself, that's what I wanted to do.
So was there, I mean, with the coming to the podcast now, was there anything out there that was like what you're doing now? Not for Atlanta, right?
No,
there was the
Bon
Appetit Foodcast.
I was diving into that every day, man.
Yeah,
it was Bon Appetit Foodcast, which I still listen to and I love.
That's a phenomenal show, man.
But every bit, for the most, it depends on what flavor of content you're really looking for, but I love their digital content so much.
Yeah.
And they are top banana, man. They're just awesome. And I still subscribe to the magazine too.
Right.
I love the magazine, but, that's just cause I'm old now, but
I like magazines, but I get Architectural Digest.
You would.
I love AD. I even call it AD. That's how old I am.
Yeah. But no,
I also still get the newspaper. I get the Atlanta Business Chronicle.
You get the
in paper format.
Wow.
Yep. And the Economist in paper format.
Apple Watch.
Congratulations.
I'm sitting here. I'm standing. Ghost of Steve Jobs. I was listening to everything that I thought that I just found really interesting, man. I listened to the Bon Appetit Foodcast, The Splendid Table. I was listening to Milk Street Radio.
Okay.
Gosh, what other food podcasts
were you listening to? Gastropod?
Gastropod was another one. Yep. Food Stuff was another one. I would go back and listen to old episodes of Alton Brown's podcast.
Okay.
But then anyone else in the industry who was also interviewed on someone else's podcast, like I would just search for chefs' names, you know, like Like if there was there, I don't remember. I want to say it was Ferran Adria. And then there was another one with, there was one with Sean Brock that I really loved, but then there was just other chefs that like, I really loved. And then there was one, Nancy Silverton, when you talk about baking sourdough bread.
Oh yeah.
She's the titan of sourdough bread. So I was just getting into everything that I could possibly think of. And then it just really dawned on me, man, of like, you know what? Where's the Atlanta food podcast? Because I just assumed that the Atlanta Foodcast was there, like someone was just doing it.
Right.
And I was like, great, I can listen to people like Ford Fry and Steven Satterfield and like Miles McQuarrie and, you know, but even like, I don't know, just people who are kind of like loosely tied to the food industry.
Right.
You know, and even if it was just not even like this long form podcast, it was just like little snippets, like interviews of whatever. And it was just so funny to me that it wasn't there. And I thought surely is either, you know, like Atlanta Business Chronicle or Atlanta Magazine or another publication would have thought like, we just, this needs to be here. Like
right.
This needs to be a thing that our city does and we're the ones to do it. And frankly, the biggest thing for me was that the Atlanta Foodcast or AT, I have both, but ATL Foodcast was not taken as a URL.
Yeah, weird. That's weird.
I get jazzed up about that stuff. When me I'm too. Surfing on...
Trust me. Oh, I own like 20 URLs just because I come up with like a business idea and I'm like, let me just go buy that.
Is that a millennial thing? Do we all do that?
No, I had a boss who was like way older than I think both of us and he's like a URL junkie.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. It might be. But I have this like... I know I'm a millennial and you're a millennial too, right?
No, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and it's like...
I was born in 87, yeah.
Yeah, it's this weird... I don't know. Like even I am a little kind of bitter around the word millennial, you know, even I'm sometimes like these damn millennials.
Yeah.
But I'm like, I'm one, you know, but it's like,
I think you can come to it more to the table of being a millennial, but also an intellectual.
Thank
you. If you're a bad, or if you're the millennial with the negative connotation, that just means that you have like a trust fund.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or you have the attention span of
a gnat.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's mm-hmm. what gets me is the people aren't willing to like sit through things anymore.
Yeah.
You know, people aren't willing to take the time to dive into a subject or listen to something or read something or slow down and be patient with the process of something done properly.
Yeah.
That's my biggest pet peeve about millennial.
Yeah.
The whole millennial stereotype. My biggest pet peeve about it is that we just don't have the patience or the attention to like properly do things anymore.
Yeah. I watch the extended versions of the Lord of the Rings trilogy all the way through from start to finish every time that I want to watch them.
Have you ever done all three in one day?
Yeah. Been a long time, but
me and a buddy of mine used to do the extended ones. We'd meet at like 8 a.m.
Oh, you have to.
And we do extended. Yeah. And we get done at like 1 a.m.
Yeah. It's more than 11 hours of content.
It's a lot.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
It is a lot.
But anyway. Not to go too far down this rabbit hole, but you
podcasts.
So you start the Foodcast March 2018, and when we had
I had started working on it. I mean, so it's so funny. I mean, because you mentioned like editing, I started working on it in the winter of 2017.
Oh wow, okay.
So it was like the fall or the winter. I mean, it was probably like September or October. That's when I started like building everything, and my wife was designing everything, and I'm. You know, starting to, because it was the previous summer. Yeah, actually, it might have been way back before that. I mean, but I'm in the summer. That's when I like got all like the gear that I needed, and I started scripting interviews. And I had to reach out to people that were just friends of like, hey, I'm going to start this podcast, but it's going to be food and people in the industry. And I love your story. Here's how I would kind of like frame our interview. What do you think? And of course, like people who, you know, like Ben's a nice guy. I think. So I'll say yes to this, you know? So, but that's what it was, man. It took me a long time. And the date that we started on was totally arbitrary. I was just like, I'll just pick a Tuesday.
Yeah. You know? Same with us.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Honestly, I wanted to get 6 episodes fully edited and ready to drop before I was ready to push anything out. So that's what it did. But it took me, not even kidding you, man. It took me probably 3 months to be confident in how my content sounded to actually push it live. And then if you go back and listen
to the quality of my first 6, 7, 8, 9 episodes, maybe don't. Maybe let me introduce you to the people that were on the show, and I'll make a personal introduction to you so you can listen to their story from their mouth instead of on my podcast.
Well, like, don't be that hard on yourself, man. It always starts out kind of bad. It's hard. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's tough. We picked an arbitrary day, July 23rd. And we were talking about before we hit record that you never forget like the first episode, the date that it came out.
Oh, yeah,
for us, it was July 23rd, 2018, with my buddy Alex Vernon of Comeback Vinyl.
Yeah.
And the audio quality was terrible. The interview, thank God, went well.
Right.
Because I had practiced on like 15 people before I actually started, you know, recording and releasing for real.
Yeah.
But it's always a labor of love and improvement.
Yeah.
I mean, it's never going to be perfect. It's never, if you ever thought that it was perfect, then I think you would just give up and walk away because this is not the kind of person you are. It's not the kind of person I am. Like, it's never perfect.
Right.
You always are improving and tweaking and whatever. But,
yeah.
But you, when we talked in June or July last year, you were like, yeah, the pinnacle for me would be to get Steven Satterfield on the show, and then there, you know, very shortly thereafter, you interviewed him.
Yeah,
and have been on a you know, a fucking roll since then, man.
Well, like it's so funny because, you know, someone like Steven Satterfield, I've dined in his restaurant so many times,
right?
And then also just been a part of events that he's at, and I feel like I've had such a fun opportunity to eat so much of his cooking, and I just really adore his story. I love that. Because an age ago, I really wanted to work in the music industry. I thought that was like the goal for me. Like, I actually went to college to study music business.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah. But I, you know, there was something that I was just very drawn to about him, and especially, I mean, his story is wonderful, and he's a Georgia boy, and, you know, played in a, I mean, I love Sealy, his band.
Yeah.
Like I have his music, you know, and I listen to it and I love it. So having that connection was really cool, but more just his appreciation and how he shows that appreciation and that level of respect for how the food has grown and the people who handle the food that has grown. And how that food that is grown from the person that handles that food that is grown makes its way into his restaurant and then ends up in the kitchen handled by him and his team and then makes its way onto the plate.
Right.
For you to enjoy and pay American dollars for.
Yeah.
Or whatever form of currency you want to use. I don't know. Maybe they take PayPal. Who knows?
But he puts a lot of care into the preparation and sourcing and procurement of his food.
You've been there. I mean, you know,
it's, oh, like, my God, it's fucking awesome. Well, Steve, and, your food is amazing.
But, you know, it's dishes that are just so, so beautifully clever in terms of flavor presentation. And also it's not an amalgam of ingredients. It's like four things.
Yeah.
Because if you've ever had the farm egg and celery
incredible
cream.
Best one of my favorite dishes, if not my favorite dish there.
But like, look at how much,
or maybe the carrots are my favorite dish. Right. I don't know.
But look at how much ingenuity is in that dish. I mean, it's like, it's everything that you want, but then like the flavors are not, it's not, you know, it's not a Wagyu that we, you know, poached in duck fat and then, you know, reverse seared on, you know, some amazing cooktop and then served it with a reduction foie gras. You know, like, it's just not fussy food is what I love.
Yes.
His food is, I mean, what he and his team do with vegetables, especially, I mean, my favorite thing is the seasonal vegetable plate, not only because it's amazing, but also because I got to watch, Linton Hopkins interview him at Food and Wine years ago. And, I got to try like his cornbread and it was like sea island red peas. And then Linton Hopkins, the quote that I remember it in my head at least was, Steven Satterfield's seasonal vegetable plate is one of the most important dishes that our country has to offer. And the way that he said that, like important, not best, not most amazing, not, you know, not prolific or whatever, but just the most important. And as he's saying that, my jaw is like hitting the floor. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so much fun. And I didn't really know much about him that back then.
Yeah. And you brought that up on it, your interview with him.
Oh yeah.
About that quote. That was one of my, excuse me, these allergies, man. Damn.
Yeah.
But that was one of my favorite episodes that you did, just because I've met Steven. He's incredibly just humble and warm person. And fun fact, if you're listening, fun fact, one time I was walking down the Beltline and I hear kind of faint music coming towards me from some sort of outdoor speaker. And I see to my left coming the opposite way on the Beltline is Steven Satterfield on his bicycle. And he's got some Bluetooth portable speaker on the front of his bike. And he is blasting. When I say blasting, I mean blasting like hardcore rap music.
Nice.
And he's just booking it down the Beltline. He's having like the time of his life. And I'm like, yes.
I see him a lot. I did see that. He's got his sunglasses on a lot. And he just like
yeah, dude is fast.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he's really fast. Very aerodynamic.
Yeah,
you and I've got a little more around the middle than he does, and he's just a super
He's
skinny
because he's a really good looking guy. But anyway.
Yeah, man. So well, you've interviewed a crap ton of amazing people with so much more to go.
Yeah, man.
But I want to talk about like what are you eating?
Oh God,
right? Like so you're kind of like the in guy with Atlanta food. But well, I mean what. I want to kind of give people who are listening to this show an idea, if they're not familiar with Atlanta food, of like what's good, where should they go?
Yeah.
What are some of the best like dishes you've had lately? Mm. Because, you know, being where we are in town, food's everywhere, man. Yeah. Food is it's blowing up so fast. Mm-hmm. I mean, so many things popping up. New pieces of the Beltline are opening all the time.
Oh yeah.
One place that I really love that I've gone to several times recently is Lloyd's.
Yeah,
what
a cool place
on DeKalb. Oh my God,
what a neat theme!
Yeah, it's throwing it back to like Midwestern dive bar.
Oh yeah, you're drinking like Miller High Life, and then it's you know
and like Narragansett.
Yeah,
and Genesee.
Yep,
and then, you have like the Blue Plate Special, the meatloaf and two.
Totally,
you
know, it's like a meat and two, meat and three meets like you know cheap beer, and it feels like something that was you know in the heyday somewhere in the Midwest, like in just someone's neighborhood. You know,
yeah, Lloyd's is there's no pretense. It is all just
totally.
It's wholesome and just fucking tasty. I love Lloyd's.
But let me do Victory Sandwich Bar.
Yes, that's right. That's right. But yeah, tell me what's like you know in the last like year plus that you've been doing the show now and getting more involved. Like, what are you eating? And what should people eat?
You know, that's a really funny thing because you know The podcast is very much driven by the person and the story as well as the cuisine, but not necessarily like the physical side of the cuisine. You know, like I think we talk a lot about food and we talk a lot about dishes and menus and everything, but so much of what I'm doing with the podcast is really about the person or the people, you know? Mm. But in terms of like eating, man, it's, you know, we've been in Atlanta now since 2013 and, it's really hard to not like play the hits, but ours, you know? So it's like Lee's Bakery on Buford Highway. Chef Lou, when it was open, was another great place. Cause that's where we would
Chef Lou was incredible. Yeah.
That's where we would go get Zha Long Bao. Golly, I haven't had Korean barbecue in a long time, but I mean, one of the places I remember going with a lot of people just all the time was Iron Age, but I haven't been there in a long time.
678 barbecue up in Duluth is also
I've never been,
fantastic.
A lot of people talk about 678.
Yeah, very good.
But man, places that we eat a lot. Well, Lee's Bakery is one of them. We love pretty much everything we've ever had from Lee's, and I always love to try something that I've never had before.
Right.
Sometimes it goes well. Sometimes I try, man. I really do try, but man. So like on a regular basis, we eat everything up and down Krog Street Market all the time.
Yeah.
It's you know, like a few things from Bar Mercado, like a couple things from Recess. I'm getting something the giant Laffa from Yala.
From Yala. Oh, it's so good.
The thing is the size. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I mean, it's the size of my forearm.
I had
one
last weekend. Incredible.
It's two meals, dude. Yeah. It's great. There's a, God, what's it called again? Is it Phanom? The pho place in Krog. We'll go there.
Phanom, yeah.
Yep. You know, gosh, it's just like, it's so much stuff. But man, my wife and I went to Watchmen's pretty recently.
How was that?
It's awesome.
Yeah.
So, I mean, get oysters, get everything, you know, that you want. I mean, seafood is incredible, but right. The thing that I really have to like shout out, I mean, especially coming from the bread perspective, you need to look up what a Sally Lunn roll is. And that's what they have on the menu.
Okay. Sally.
Yeah. Lunn. L-U-N-N.
Sally Lunn roll.
Yep.
Okay.
So it's a super old school, roll. And, I want to look it up so I can show you real quick,
but yeah, please.
It's this amazing bread that they have on the, I think a lot of people call it Sally Lunn bread, but theirs is like a roll. But it is so rich and it's like swimming in butter and I had a little bit of like flaky, like Maldon sea salt on top and I got some oysters and, that's sticking out in my head as something that's really special. But
okay.
So we go to everywhere around Krog, inside Krog, up on the Beltline. We didn't eat in Raffi a lot on the Beltline.
Yeah.
Man, where else
I've yet to eat at Nina and Raffi, but there's a whole bunch of places opening up right in that little strip.
God, yeah. I mean, we've been getting coffee a lot from the James Room right there at SPX Alley. I get my haircut at Freedom Barbecue because of you guys.
Thank you, sir. Yeah. Give those guys support. They're doing a phenomenal job. Yep. Yeah.
I get my haircut by James.
Okay.
Good dude.
Yeah.
But they don't have a lot to eat there, so. but man, if we're not going somewhere in Krog, we actually go to Ponce City a lot. We eat a lot of Monero. Get the burrito at Monero.
Yeah.
It does not need chicken or pork or anything. Just get the vegetarian
burrito.
Oh yeah. You need to look up runner beans. That's what they have.
In the burrito. Okay, runner beans.
Look that up.
All right.
Sean Brock is a genius, but we eat a lot up and down Ponce City as well. And then if we're driving, and again, we don't drive a lot.
Sure.
We walk everywhere that we can. We go to the Grant Park Market a lot. Their deli, just like Candler Park Market, is awesome. Yep. But man, other restaurants that I've been to where I have to get in the car, I'm trying to think. Restaurant Holmes up in Alpharetta.
I've heard of it.
That's a really, really killer spot. Gosh, what else? Oh, I just went to Mission Market.
How was that?
Buckhead. So Ian Winslade, he was the chef at Murphy's in Virginia Highland for 6 or 7 years. It's awesome. It's the menu is, there's something on the menu for everybody. You've got like your proteins, there's pizza on the menu, there's salads, there's lots of like good shared plates. I'm a bread guy, so they do this really good cocoa rye on the menu. And I hope that they haven't changed it by now, but, that's a cool restaurant. And that to me is, that's the next wave of dining that you're going to see in Buckhead, in my opinion. So, I mean, cause you can go to Buckhead, you can go to any number of like steakhouses, like surf and turf kind of places, like big box meats, restaurant food factory, like Cheesecake Factory and all the places around Lenox and all that kind of stuff. And, but like the guys from Fifth Group just opened up, Echo in Buckhead, which is awesome.
Right. Yeah.
So
I mean, Biltong bars in Buckhead now.
Yeah. Biltong. And like, so there's good places in my opinion to go to in Buckhead.
It's definitely growing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And honestly, for the longest time, the only place that I would go eat in Buckhead was Nonstop.
Really?
And Neil and Samira, I mean, I love those guys. They're friends of mine. They were on the show last season and, but their food is awesome.
They were on Tony's layover program as well, weren't they? Tony Bourdain's layover program.
I think so. Holy cow. I didn't know that.
They cameoed a couple of times on the show talking about Atlanta food or something. Yeah, but
that was a place that I would, I mean, we would like, this was before kids. I would go there a lot too. Whenever I would have meetings in Buckhead, I would make my way or go out of my way even to just go to Nonstop.
But yeah.
I feel like there's better dining, you know, from a local's perspective as well. Like Mission and Market is the kind of place that I would just, if we had a night out, my wife and I would go there. Like we'd go to Echo in Buckhead because I wouldn't really want to go to Echo in Midtown. You know, we've been there too much.
Sure. Yeah. Why not try the new experience?
Yeah.
But, or Biltong in Buckhead or whatever. You know,
but I mean, Biltong in Ponce City is always like mobbed on a busy night.
It is, dude.
So.
It's insane. Yeah, and I like King and Duke a lot. In Buckhead. Speaking of kind of the older,
totally
more established places, I've never been to Umi.
How much do you need to eat sushi?
Right.
Do they do like omakase or anything?
They do. Yeah.
Well, that's fun.
Yeah.
So go do that.
It's expensive.
Yeah.
I mean, quite expensive for a lot of people, prohibitively so. But
someone asked me about sushi. I was like, look, I am not an authority on sushi. I know what I like to eat, but I think what I'd like to eat more is like surprise me with something that I've never had before.
Yeah.
Because you think it's interesting.
Yeah.
That's what I like the most. But I think
I love
that's
sushi, man.
That's why omakase is super, super fun.
Right.
You know, like, if you're like, oh my gosh, I love this super amazing, hard to get in sushi bar, and you're ordering like, do you guys have spicy tuna roll? Like
that pisses me off. Yeah, man.
It's like, just go eat Trader Joe's sushi, dude.
Right. Right.
What are you doing?
When people like California roll or like spicy, you know, like tsunami roll or whatever. I'm like, no.
What's the one with the fried onions on top?
Yeah, like, no, that deserve, pisses me off, man. Yeah, that
you do deserve to die.
Well, it's like if you've ever actually been to Japan, I'm lucky enough to have been to Japan. It's it blows your mind how deep the roots of that culture go from a food perspective. Sushi being one of those things that's, you know, sacrosanct in the culture.
Yeah.
And to even experience a little bit of it, you know, in the kind of purest sense, and to bring that back, it pisses you off when you see like, you know, people dabbing like whatever, a teaspoon of wasabi in their soy sauce and just like, you know, and just like drowning their fish in soy sauce or, like or whatever. It's like, come
before,
on, man.
Before trying the broth of your pho or your ramen, like don't just dump sriracha in it.
Right.
Because you feel like it might need it.
Right.
Try it and taste it because that's what someone worked really hard on to make.
These are foods that have sustained nations and cultures for thousands of years. And there are, I mean, I have nothing against fusion and I have nothing against, you know, these different cultural cuisines crossing borders. I think that's kind of the world we live in now, you know, quite frankly, and there's nothing wrong with it, but, to blatantly disregard the heritage and the culture of that food just kind of pisses me off. But in terms of good sushi, Brush Sushi in Decatur, fantastic.
Brush is awesome. Yeah.
Miso Ko, Guy Wong's restaurant in or the little counter in Ponce City Market. Man. Fantastic.
That place needed it.
Great place to go. Just like grab a quick, you know, sushi lunch. That place.
I'm never like mad about sushi. It's just, you know, like if it's going to be like a sit down restaurant, cause to me, like now sushi is like, that is an easy thing for me to eat, like grab and go. But if it's going to be a restaurant, like it has to be something that I can like drum up in my mind as like I'm preparing for.
Yeah.
But man, I'm trying to think of like other restaurants. Like Decatur, mostly in Decatur, we've been eating it. Well, always Chai Pani. There's never a day where I will turn down Chai Pani or Botiwala ever in my life.
Both phenomenal.
Yes.
Yeah.
246 is always a really great spot. And then, honestly, we've been eating so much Grindhouse in Decatur because it's a great place for my kids to run around and we'll meet friends there. And now I'm thinking of like going back down to Cab and then like, what way could I make my way in? Like East Atlanta Village. Have you been to Banshee yet?
Banshee is so good. I was just about to say,
they
surprised me with how good their food was.
I haven't eaten there yet, but like, I've heard so many people talk about it. So I need to go.
It's surprisingly amazing food.
Yeah.
Like amazing food. I thought it was delicious and I'm not a very easy critic, but I thought it was fucking tasty. If you had to, let's say someone's coming into town for a weekend or there's a local who's just like not like.
This is great. One of my best friends in the world is actually coming to visit in May.
There you go. So what should, let's say you're coming in like, you've got a full Friday through Sunday.
Ooh, it's a lot of time.
Right. Assuming you're not going to be eating the entire time you're here.
You go to like, the CNN Center, you go to the aquarium and you go to the World of Coke and then you go home.
Yeah, that's screw that, honestly. Yeah.
Thanks, Show ATL. It's been great. What if I was serious?
If you were, I would say, well, we've just wasted an hour and 12 minutes because we're not airing any of
that
this.
That Ben Getz guy is a dick.
If anyone says that, you know, staying around Centennial Olympic Park and hitting like the greatest hits of like, you know, the days of your Atlanta tourism,
Skyview Atlanta,
they can suck it, man, because they have no idea what they're talking about.
Hey,
no
offense, but it's cool. It's cool if that's.
It's fine if that's where you want to spend like 2 hours of a, you know,
Everyone
Saturday afternoon.
Everyone wants to meet Anderson Cooper, Parsa. Everybody does.
Yeah, it's overrated. Once you've had dinner with him once or twice, it's, you know, it's no fun anymore.
When you're you, who cares about life anymore?
When you're the,
But. So you've got a Friday through Sunday.
And what,
you're not from here.
You're not from here. Or let's say you are a local, but like you just don't get out much, right? Like right now, you know, spring of 2019, what should people really be hitting, right, in terms of food and bev? And equally as important, what should they skip? Like, what are some of those places where people are like, you should go here?
I'm going to find a very diplomatic way of not answering that question, but we'll get to that.
That's okay. Well, let me rephrase it. What's one place that's really good, but given the short time window, might not be the highest priority relative to some other places?
I would look at this in like a place that you have to hit for like breakfast, lunch, and dinner, maybe.
Perfect. Yes, let's do that.
So I would say visiting, and again, this is just my opinion.
And I might throw in a couple too.
You should.
Okay.
Because this is your show. What I say on my show is like, I can do whatever I want.
This is not, dude, this show is for the people, man.
Yeah. But like, you know, even like we did an April Fool's episode because why not?
Yeah, that's what brilliant.
We did. It was fun. But, so this is just, again, my opinion. I don't care if you're into donuts and cronuts and all that goofy stuff. I mean, it's great, you know, but I would look at this more like dessert for me anyway, but
yeah.
I don't want that for breakfast. I am 100% team muchacho for breakfast.
Very good.
Because, and some people are like, those breakfast tacos, like you could get them for, you know, an eighth of the price on Buford Highway. It's like, I agree with you. However, muchacho is not on Buford Highway. And I walk there from my home. Yep. So I'm 100% team muchacho for, the reggae. So it's just like the $2 breakfast tacos.
Okay.
Get like, I'm not even joking you, spend like $30 on breakfast tacos because they will go like that.
Yeah.
If you're sitting with four hungry friends, like everyone's going to eat five.
Oh yeah.
So that, I don't always drink coffee with dairy in it, but if you want a really good iced latte, get an iced latte with the golden syrup. It's like it's like a proprietary like spice blend.
Interesting. So at Muchacho.
Yeah. It's not just like vanilla, you know I mean? It's a lot of right. like spices as well. So definitely Muchacho for me. Lunch. Man, this is interchangeable, but I would say, go get the Detroit style pizza from Nina and Rafi for lunch. Okay. Because it's worth it. Yeah. Or if you have the time to make your way up to Old Fourth Ward Pizza in whatever part of OTP it's in, I can't remember, but Anthony Spina, if you can't make it all the way outside the perimeter, come get the Detroit style. And if you can, go get the grandma pie from Old Fourth Ward. It's worth it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the only reason I say that is because, you know, both are phenomenal.
Right. Yeah.
And then
wise choice.
Yeah. Dinner. If you have to sit down, it's gotta be somewhere on Buford Highway for me.
Yeah.
I would say pho is a really good dinner option
for sure.
I think a lot of people end up eating it for lunch most of the time on the weekends, but it's a really good dinner option. So
it is. You can always supplement it with like some lemongrass chicken and, you know, totally, or some shaking beef and just, make it a full meal.
Yeah. So I'm 100%. It really would not matter to me if someone said, do you want to go to Pho Dai Loi or do you want to go to Lee's Bakery for pho? And then, but the benefit also is like, you can get banh mi at Lee's Bakery. They'd be like, I'd be happy with either, honestly.
Yeah.
Nam Phong
is also very good.
Nam Phong's great. Yeah. Dude, honestly, I want someone to always like suggest something that I would not think to look for.
Right.
You know, It's just always hard too, because I've got to think about like, what are my kids going to eat? They actually love like Thai, Vietnamese, almost everything that we've had that's really even things that are like kind of pickled. Like, I mean, a lot of Malaysian cuisine, like they'll go for it. And I'm really proud of them. So they tried kimchi, they tried sambal the other day.
Good for them.
And my daughter likes spicy food. My son, he's working on it, but
yeah,
they're good. They're good eaters.
Yeah.
So does that adequately answer that question?
I think so. And hearing you talk about it kind of makes me want to have a go at it, at answering the question.
So if someone were to tell me that'd be my day, like you're going to have breakfast tacos at Muchacho, and then you're going to go have really good pizza, potentially in one of two places or both. Maybe you do both. I don't know. Maybe you're the kind of person that eats a lot of pizza for lunch, and then you're going to have either pho and a banh mi or really good pho and a lot of other things at another amazing Vietnamese restaurant somewhere on Buford Highway. I'd say that's a pretty damn good day.
What's your choice for a Sunday brunch? Are you a bruncher?
No.
Okay.
What gave it away?
reaction.
Brunch. honestly, the only place that we really go for brunch at all is Hampton and Hudson.
Okay.
Fair. Because it's just easy.
Yeah,
and, like, it is. My kids can run around at Inman Quarter, like while we're on the patio, if we can ever get a seat out there.
Yep.
That's a really easy one. Or it's like, we don't really do traditional brunch, you know? So
yep.
We're not fun.
But.
I would say if you want to get a really good brunch though, go to Hampton and Hudson. It's actually really
good. Their brunch is actually really,
really
damn
good.
Yeah. Do they have the chicken and waffle or is it a chicken slider? Which one is it?
Oh gosh. I don't get that stuff anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, bring on the fruit.
Good for you, man. I need to get better about that, but
let's seriously. Go walk 9 miles on a Saturday and eat some fruit.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Amazing what, you know, a wholesome family life will do for you. I'm still unmarried degenerate, but,
that's how I think of you.
Thank you. That's very kind of you because that's the kind of persona I want to put out on the show.
Solidify what's in your mind, man. That's all I care about.
But, for me, if I had to answer that question, somebody coming to town, just to diversify the options a little bit to whoever's listening, I would say breakfast, you either got to go to one of two places, in my opinion, Rhea's Bluebird or Homegrown.
Yeah.
Both pretty close to one another.
Yeah. Because if you're getting, what I always got at Rhea's was always the brisket breakfast.
Yeah, delicious. Ooh,
it's
yeah.
It's really more like a bowl of soup.
Yeah.
It's just so damn good. And then your comfy chicken biscuit over at Homegrown.
That shit is so tasty, man.
I know a lot of people who would say that's one of the most iconic Atlanta dishes.
Yeah. And Homegrown is just no bullshit eating, you know?
No.
And so is Rhea's. I mean, they're both just like...
Do they still have
like,
the gift shop thing in the back at Homegrown?
I'm not sure. the tiny little corner, like in the, by the back booth?
Like, there's like a bunch of tchotchke stuff back
there. Yes, they do. Yeah, they do have that.
I love that. That's fun.
Yeah, I love Homegrown. I love Rhea's Bluebird. For lunch... Lunch is always kind of a tough one because, like, really, I could go anywhere for lunch around town.
You want to get like a smoothie bowl?
No, definitely not. 100% not. That's not what I want. Lunch, honestly, go to Bread and Butterfly.
Yeah,
very good in Inman Park for lunch. Go to Krog Street. You know, go to Krog or Pond City.
Mm-hmm.
And Grant Park Market's also very good.
Mm-hmm.
Good place to get, you know, a lunch and still be around a bunch of things.
I'm going to throw a completely different option for lunch because this it totally fits within that realm of like the nonstop, like come in, like build your base and your protein and all the other fixins and everything. Nonstop's great, but if you can't make it to Buckhead, have you been to Bezoria in Midtown?
I have been to Bezoria. It's pretty good. Yeah.
Rules.
Bezoria is very good.
That place is awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everything that I've ever had there, if anyone ever asks me like, well, it's not very authentic, it's like, I still don't give a shit. It's great.
Yeah.
Bezoria is awesome.
I agree. With lunch, I would also throw out Cypress Street, Pint and Plate.
Yeah.
On 6th and Cypress in Midtown or The Canteen.
Yeah.
On 5th Street. I love The Canteen, man. It's
dude,
like
Ginsburg's place, man.
Yes. It used to be TGM Bagel. Now it's TGM Soup. It's fine. I'm not upset. I just wish they served both.
Yeah.
But yeah, very tasty. Let's see. I think that covers it for lunch for me. For dinner, Buford Highway, always great option.
Yeah.
I think I'd have to throw out Banshee that we were just talking about.
Yeah.
Banshee is a phenomenal dinner option. Tied with that, which is saying high praise of Banshee, is Miller Union.
Yeah.
I absolutely go to Miller Union. It would be worth your time. Drinks.
Oh, see, you're way cooler than I am.
No, you've got a lot more responsibility.
Like kids are in bed at 7 o'clock.
Yeah.
You want to split a beer with me while we sit on the couch? That's what drinks look like for us. Yep.
That's okay, man. You're just solidifying the fact that I am a hopeless degenerate. But no,
it's like, would you like to share half of this second self Triforce IPA with me?
That's a good beer.
That's a
great beer.
Yeah.
And we're interviewing the guys from Arches on Thursday.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I'm excited to hear their story a bit.
Yeah. That's awesome, man.
But I drink more than I should, not to say that I'm an alcoholic, but like I'll have like the random glass of bourbon on like a Thursday night, Wednesday night by myself, like with dinner. And it's great, you know, it's just like a little bit of bourbon, a little, you know, after work, after a long day kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But then I finish it and I'm like, why did I just do that? But drinks, Lloyd's, man, you can't go wrong with Lloyd's if you're looking for something just like low key. I've run into so many people there that are so fun to talk to, whether I've known them, you know, whether I know them or not.
Yeah.
I always stay an hour or two longer at that place than I intended to just because I'm having great conversation with people at the bar. That place is a blast.
Especially if you're a beer drinker, do you ever go to the Garage, Monday Night Garage?
Yeah, I've been a couple of times. Yeah.
I mean, I know that I think their hours might be a little different. I mean, it depends, you know, every brewery is a little bit different, but that's just a really fun place to hang out. I mean, I used to go to their first spot, like that was way up off of, I mean, gosh, West Side, like, but like Northwest Side. I mean, like, you know, you were outside of West Side Provisions a little bit, but
that's, the Garage that's is a still fun around. Place. Yeah. Yeah.
So, but the Garage is great. It's
I love
super
it.
Cool.
Yeah. That whole part it's of fun. The Beltline. Yeah. And on the West Side Trail is just
that to me is phenomenal. Really that's a more preferred place to drink beer on the Beltline for me.
Well, because like, it's less crowded, man. I mean, that part's still not like tourist city yet.
No, I'm with you.
Lloyd's is great. I would say Little Trouble in West Side Provisions District.
Yeah,
fantastic if you're looking for something a little different, a little, I would call it Tokyo Underground.
Yeah.
Great vibe there.
Theme that they carry there is very strong and awesome.
I love it. I love the whole Japanese underground culture, and that's very much, it's very neon, very almost like Drive.
Yeah.
The Ref and Film with Ryan Gosling.
Big time. Yeah. No, it's 100% that. If you look at their Instagram feed, it's 100% that.
Yeah, totally. And then finally for drinks, I'd have to say, this one hurts a little bit because it's not so much for the drink program as much as for the atmosphere, but the Den under Beetle Cat is a great time on a weekend.
Oh.
If you're here on like a Friday night or a Saturday night,
they've
got a DJ spinning, you know, actual vinyl.
Oh, that's cool.
You know, everything from, you know, 70s through 90s dance music. And,
that's cool,
and the bar program is good. I'm not saying it's bad, but it's not like, don't go there like for the drinks. They're not like the best drinks you've ever had in your life, but they're great drinks.
Yeah.
And then just because I asked you the brunch question, I was thinking about it. Brunch for me, I would go personally to, what's Hugh's spot? Empire State South.
Mm.
Empire State South Sunday brunch.
Big time.
That's where you're going to find me.
That's actually a phenomenal brunch spot. I treat it more like a coffee bar.
Yeah. Oh, dude.
I've actually, I take that back. I still go there for coffee quite a bit when I'm walking because I don't ride bird scooters very often, but, it's a really great place for lunch. I love taking people there because it kind of takes them by surprise. Like, why are you taking me into this office building? Like, no,
right.
Just wait. And then you round the corner and you're like, check out this beautiful restaurant. Look at all the bourbon they have up here.
Dude.
And
yeah.
Great coffee. And Empire State South is phenomenal.
I love that place. Also great bourbon program is Local 3.
Yes.
Local
3 is another one of those spots, man. Like you know, I mean, unless you're searching for it,
it's out there a little ways.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you're up like North Side quite a bit, but it's,
even when you're there, it's hard to find.
I wonder if they still do that thing on their menu. They used to call it the Big Kahuna Burger. So everything has like a movie reference. It's usually like
a Lebowski theme.
Yeah. It's a
bar.
Big Lebowski theme bar. And, but they did this burger called the Big Kahuna, and it was like the perfect exercise in excess. And it was awesome. I wonder if they still do it. I gotta check that out.
That'd be interesting. Dude, I could
go eat brunch though.
I could sit here and talk food with you forever. And I think next time we should meet at your place or somewhere and just talk food again.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, let's do 30 minutes while my kids are still awake so they can be on the podcast.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah. And I'll try
to eat all your broccoli. Did you eat all your broccoli? Did your sister eat all your broccoli? Or did you? That's a good question.
I just enjoy talking to you just because you're really good behind a mic, which is, I mean, you're a cool fucking guy, but it's nice to have someone who's good with a mic, who knows how to do a podcast, who knows how to interview and do a show, because it just makes things just a lot, you know, easier on my end and more fun and really, you know, I think a better experience for the listener, I think.
Well, dude, and I really appreciate you saying that. I really do. And it's just so funny, man, because I kind of stumbled into it, you know? I mean, I think I also have a lot of, you know, there's a lot of like self-deprecating humor that makes its way into the way I do my podcast, and I just try to have fun. But I think you know, the way that you guys do your show and the way that I do mine and the way that I would really encourage a lot of people to do it is, you know, I feel like we're all doing, not all of us, but you know, I think podcasting is kind of now the way that people were connecting with like blogs back in like 2008, 2009.
Right.
Like, yeah, yeah. It's just in the best way. I feel like we're experiencing ubiquity right now, mm-hmm. but it's more of, do you want to listen to news? Is it art? Is it culture? Is it food? Is it is it politics? Is it something politically driven? Is it a nonprofit? Is it a podcast from a company that you like? I listen, Kickstarter has a podcast.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know that.
It's great. You know, I just downloaded a podcast today from the guys from Bell's Brewery.
Oh, interesting.
In Michigan.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I just love that people are using this as a format, you know? And, I think that's why I just decided like, I'm not going to take myself too seriously. And the moment that I do, I think I'm going to have to kick my own ass.
Yeah. That's one of the things about this show is that I'm humbled every time I have a guest on.
Yeah. And I feel the same way, dude.
It's like, shit, man. Like, I'm not really doing much. I'm just the conduit for the story to get out there. And I'm cool with that.
Like, taking your time to come and do this. Like, this is, it's fun. So I enjoy it, but yeah, man.
Yeah, dude. Well, it's 10 p.m. on a Tuesday night, and you've got a wife and kids.
Hell yeah, 10:03.
And I don't want to keep you much longer. I do want to do this again and just rant about food.
We'll do it.
But
we'll go neighborhood by neighborhood.
Yeah, that'd be great.
What do you like?
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Yeah,
but we'll do it. We'll do it some night on a nice patio with nice weather over a beer and
nice.
Maybe we capture some of the insect noises on the. On the microphones.
And the bird scooters going by.
Exactly. Yeah. But Ben, dude, you're the man. Congrats on a year plus of really phenomenal interviews and content. Congrats on continued growth.
Thanks,
I hope
man.
You continue to grow and do well. Really, really just kind of proud to be running in the same podcasting circles.
It's fun, man.
And
it's good
shared
stuff.
Love of our city
indeed,
through
man.
Art and through food. But yeah, can't wait to do it again. Ben, thanks so much for coming on the show, and we will chat sometime soon, I'm sure.
Thanks, Parsa.
Thanks. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Show ATL Podcast, the podcast where we seek to find and highlight Atlanta creatives and creators and tell the stories of the people and organizations making amazing things in our city. I am your host, Parsa Benamory. Our show today was produced by Mr. Coleman Erkins with help from myself and Corrigan Nolan. Our music is produced by Relax with Alex. I want to thank all of the guests who come onto this program and tell their amazing stories with us and share with us, as well as to our wonderful listeners who continue to support us week in and week out. If you love this episode, if you love this show as a whole, if you like Show ATL and consider it something that you listen to frequently, please consider giving us a 5-star rating or a nice review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever else you use to listen to your podcasts. Please consider supporting us if you care to. Again, we're a small team working to put together this show for you every week. And we have a Patreon page, www.patreon.com/showATL. You can give a one-time donation or a recurring donation. All funds will be used to make this show better and better and better for you. So we would greatly appreciate that. Thank you again for listening. Thank you again for supporting us. Thank you again for being a part of the conversation that we continue to have day in and day out to make our city a better place, a more creative place. We will catch you next time. Thank you. Goodbye. Today's episode is brought to you by Old Fourth Ward Light Co. Based out of Atlanta, Old Fourth Ward Light Co. leverages unique design and artistry blended with unusual everyday items to create really unique and cool looking lamps. If you go to www.oldfourthwardlight.com and click on the shop button, you'll be able to see their full range of products. And if you enter the coupon code SHOWATL at checkout, you can get 10% off any order. Thanks.